This is the Book Echoes podcast, a home for interviews and discussion of literature and illustration for kids and teens. I'm Connie B. Dowell, and here's the show.
All right. So welcome to the Book Echoes podcast. And today on the podcast, we have Lena Kuttner talking about her middle grade book, The Magic of Norumbega. So welcome, Lena.
Thank you, Connie. Happy to be here. I'm glad we could make this work out.
Yeah, I'm so glad. And she has a really interesting backstory behind the research she's done for this book and what inspired this book. So could you tell us a little bit about Norumbega?
Sure. So Norumbega was an amusement park in the town of Newton or city of Newton, Massachusetts. It was built in 1897 and it lasted until 1963. And it was what was called in those days a trolley park because people used trolleys for transportation. They didn't have cars that they could use. And during the week, they would take the trolleys to go to work or wherever they needed to go. And on the weekends, the trolleys pretty much sat idle. People went to church or synagogue or visited with family that typically lived nearby and had no reason to use the trolleys. So in cities all over the country, the companies that owned the trolley cars built amusement parks at the end of the trolley line to give people a reason to get on the trolleys on the weekends and have a destination. So Norumbega, that's how Norumbega Amusement Park started, was as a trolley park. So jumping ahead many years, I got a dog, a golden retriever that I named Getty in 1990. And I, every day I would take her to a dog park where she would run around and I would walk around with my friends. And I started hearing these stories about how this dog park at one point in time had been an amusement park, which I just couldn't believe it because it was just a very overgrown field, basically, with a path that went around it. And as it turned out, the Norumbega Amusement Park, when it closed in 1963, most of the land was sold off to the Marriott Hotel, and they built a hotel on the land, and 10 acres was set aside as conservation land, which was now this dog park that I was walking in every day. So I was just fascinated by this. Although I had grown up not that far away, I sort of missed the era of when the park was open for the most part. And I just started doing some research about it, going to the local historical society and talking to people who were old enough to remember when this had been an amusement park. And people would glow when they talked about what a wonderful, magical place it was. And the more I learned, the more fascinated I became. And at the time, I had a young son, and I really wanted him to know about this park. So I started writing a book for him. So we're going back to the early 1990s. And it's, the main characters were his dog, Getty, and another friend's dog, Murphy. And I created this fantasy, but I set it in the amusement park around 1940. And I tried to make the setting of the park very accurate to how it was back then. And over the years, I work on it a little bit, put it away, work on it, put it away. And then about a year and a half ago, I decided to finish the book. So I did.
Awesome. Awesome. So it seems like a really interesting research process that you could actually talk to. It was close enough in time that you could talk to people who had been there.
Yes. I went to a lecture at a local college, and the person giving the lecture, who has since passed away, his name was Bob Pollock. He was a wealth of information, and he had a slideshow and, just lots of stories and anecdotes. And I had the foresight, because this was before I ever even thought about writing a book, but I had the foresight to take notes. And there were just lots of interesting little tidbits that he talked about that I included in the book. years later, when I was very serious about finishing the book, I tracked down his best friend. And his best friend had a copy of all the materials that Bob had. His best friend's name was Chip Hayward. Chip had a copy of all the materials that Bob Pollock had had, and Chip gave me a copy of it all. So I have lots of primary and secondary sources of information about what had gone on at Norumbega Park. So, and I met lots of wonderful people, Chip Hayward just being one of them, but I've met lots of people who still live in the Massachusetts area who just had so many stories to tell about their times as children in the park.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. Was there anything that kind of stood out or surprised you to learn as you researched or as you wrote?
Well, one of the things that made it into my book was there was a zoo in the park until 1940. And there were one of the most popular animals in the zoo were the bears. And the bears would often escape from their cages and were not aggressive. They, you know, they had grown up in the zoo. Mm-hmm. They were around people all the time. They were well fed. But the way that the animal trainers would get them back to the cages was to get a big vat of ice cream and offer the ice cream to the bears. And then the trainer would sort of walk backward carrying the ice cream, and the bear would happily follow. And then when the bear got to the cage, he'd get to eat the ice cream. So that certainly made it into the book. Captured my imagination. Another thing that I learned about the park was that they had trapeze artists, and there was one in particular named Maisie Lunette, who was an iron jaw acrobat. And if you can picture the park, it's a big field, and then there's a Charles River runs alongside the field. And the city of Newton is on one side of the river, and the town of Weston is on the other side of the river. And they would stretch a wire across the river, and Maisie would glide along the wire from one shore to the other, holding on to a mechanism by her teeth. So there was like a metal hook would be in her teeth, and she would glide along the river. So that was another thing that had to make it into the book, because I was so fascinated by her and her antics at the park. So
yeah, wow, it sounds like a happening place.
I think it was. People just glow when they talk about it. And everybody always uses the word magical. It was such a magical place. So in my story, I had to literally make it magical to live up to their expectations.
Yeah. So I think I understood from your blurb, there's a time travel element to your story. Is that right?
That's right. So the dogs start out in present day in the dog park and go back in time to about, like I said, 1940, where they discover that, you know, their dog park had been an amusement park. And they get into a lot of trouble there. And it's a story of bravery and loyalty and friendship. And it's a good adventure story, I think, for middle grade students.
So what was it like getting into the head of a dog protagonist for that long, you know?
It was an interesting thing to do. So I based it on my dog, my golden retriever, and my dog, Getty, was a very, I think that she was a very unusual dog. She was very dreamy. She loved to play. She loved to swim in the river. And every once in a while, she would just sit by the riverside and just sort of stare into space while everybody was, all her dog friends were running around her. And she could spend a whole afternoon just sort of spacing out, sitting there. And I used to think, what is she, it's like she's listening to something that nobody else can hear. So in the book, she is listening to something. She's listening to the music coming from the amusement park. I didn't have any trouble getting into her head. I have to admit that by the time I finished the book, I was sort of anxious to write about people instead of animals, because I did spend an awful long time on this book. But I enjoyed writing about the animals. So, and there are people characters in the story too. Mm-hmm. It's not just animals. So.
Yeah. Awesome. So, how long have you been writing, and what kind of got you into writing?
I enjoyed writing from the time I was a young child. I think I always knew that I was going to write a book. I just never did it before this one. I'd written articles for magazines and for the internet and things like that. But this was the first book that I've finished from beginning to end and actually published. So I'm working on a second one now. I definitely consider this my new career, but that was my first. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it a sequel or a tie-in or something totally different?
It's not a sequel. It's similar in that it's also a fantasy that takes place in the city of Newton, sort of a historical mm-hmm. fiction from a different era. And I think it's going to be geared more towards 5th, 6th grade, maybe 7th grade. I'm not sure yet. As a writer, that's one of the things I struggle with, is what age am I actually writing for? So I'm still not really clear with this newer book who the targeted audience is going to be.
All right. So you've got been writing a while. Is there anything that you would any favorite books that you've got that you would consider like an influence or just something that's really special to you?
I think that growing up, Charlotte's Web was the most wonderful book to me. The story captured me. It stayed with me all these many years. Mm-hmm. I've reread it lots of times. And I think it was an influence for me in that it helped give me confidence that it was okay to make animals the main characters. Mm-hmm. I had years back when I first started writing the book, I joined a writing group that was led by a published author, and he was very discouraging about my idea and about making animal characters talk to each other and understand what humans were saying and so forth. And I think that was one of the reasons it took me so long to finish the book. I put it away for a long time and then took it out again, you know, and decided to finish it. But I think Charlotte's Web gave me the confidence that it was okay to do that.
Yeah, that's a shame. There's a lot of, you know, examples of really awesome books, especially books for kids that have animal protagonists.
Yes, yeah. Sylvester and the Magic Pebble is another one that I absolutely love. And you know, these were animals that talked to each other and had a family life. And so it took me a while to get over that discouragement, but fortunately I did.
Well, yeah, good.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have any, you know, you've got another book kind of in the works. Do you have any upcoming events or where people can find you online if they want to know more?
My website is www.magicnorumbega.com. Mm-hmm. Norumbega is Norumbega. So it's magicnorumbega.com. And on that site, I try to keep the site updated with my events. There's also a lot of information on the site about Norumbega Park, the history of it and so forth. Mm-hmm. So if anybody's curious about the park itself or trolley parks in general, or just interested in amusement parks, it's a good place to start to do your own research. Mm-hmm. In terms of events, I don't really have any events coming up right now with the school year is just ending at this point. I've been to a lot of schools recently, mm-hmm. Which is now winding down, and probably not much coming up for the summer, but then I'll be starting that again in the fall. I love visiting elementary schools. I typically do third grade classrooms and talk about this era of the trolley park and show pictures and talk about what life was like back then. For example, one of the stories that kids love is It cost 15 cents to take the trolley from Boston into Newton. That 15-cent ticket would get you into the park, and that same 15-cent ticket would take you home again at the end of the day. Mm. Yet, if you were caught kissing back at the turn of the century, if somebody in the a staff person from the park caught you kissing somebody else, it was a $20 fine.
Wow.
So kids love hearing those kind of stories about the park, and mm-hmm. it's just a great way to introduce them to different values that people had, you know, in different eras, and it leads to some pretty good discussion.
Awesome, awesome. And for any educators listening, I think I saw some stuff on your website that is for like schools or teacher guides or something.
Yeah, I have teacher guides, questions and things like that. That there's also like crossword puzzles and stuff like that that teachers can download. Mm-hmm. And feel free to copy and share and pass out to their students. I'm happy to have them do that.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Happy to be here. Thank you, Connie. Good luck with your podcast.
Thanks.
All righty.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Book Echoes podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes or the podcast player of your choice and leave a review. You can find out more at bookechoes.com or conniebdowell.com. Until next time.